The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very, very good morning to you. How are you? What a mad, terrible, difficult, crazy, I don't know, weekend in Israel.
Crazy, really crazy. But I've got to say Boker Tov and Shavua Tov and Chodesh Tov, because it's all three of those right now. At least good. I don't know if they're good, but they are what they are. It has been, since we last spoke to you, it's kind of been heaven and earth.
Absolutely.
We've been through ups and downs. A total of 700 rockets fired, would you believe, over the last couple of days. It's an unbelievable statistic. To think that a sovereign nation would come under attack by 700 rockets in 2 days is for me just something that's inconceivable, and I can't imagine any other nation on earth being prepared to put up with that. Really, I wouldn't. But be that as it may, 173 rockets is the statistic that we're told that were intercepted by Iron Dome over the past few days, with a 90% accuracy in terms of intercepting the rockets that it was set out to intercept. Unfortunately, however, as is always with these things, the technology is not foolproof. And people are required to go to their bomb shelters in order to create that final layer of security that is so important. And unfortunately, we've had casualties. 4 people have been killed, dozens of people injured, a lot of damage to buildings, a lot of damage to property. And so, you know, there is certainly a toll that we're having to count up at the moment in terms of the effect of the last few days. But it's been very, very crazy. I mean, you know, we can sort of roll the clock back to Friday when, again, we had the border protests along the Gaza border. There were incidents. There were snipers out who were firing at IDF soldiers. There were soldiers who were injured on Friday, and there were a number of casualties on the Gaza side. And those incidents on Friday then precipitated an attack by the IDF, by the Air Force in particular, on Friday night. And that then, as we understand things, seemed to have escalated into the barrage of rockets that were fired throughout the day on Saturday, and indeed throughout the day yesterday until even 2 o'clock this morning. You know, we sit now in a situation where apparently we have a ceasefire. It seems to be holding since 4:30 this morning. The ceasefire has been in place, and we haven't had any red alert sirens since that time. So the official word on the ground in the area which was particularly affected, which is the Gaza border area and Ashkelon and Ashdod and Beersheba, the southern areas, they are on usual activities this morning, which means schools are operating. Yesterday, no one went to school, but today everybody's going to school as usual, and the security forces are sending advice to people to conduct their daily business without any concern. Whereas yesterday the instructions were entirely different, that people had to be within a certain distance of a bomb shelter at all times, and that schools were not operating and people were advised to effectively stay indoors. Not everybody took heed of that. There were some astonishing scenes of buildings that were hit and that people were gathering around, curious onlookers to see what was going on. And as they were gathering around, there was a crowd of about 100 people gathered around to see what had happened, when another code red alert was set off and people then were scurrying into buildings. Unfortunately, the 4th victim who was killed yesterday in Ashdod was actually someone who was walking on the street and who ran into a building in order to take cover when the code red siren was sounded. Unfortunately, that was exactly the building that was hit by the missile that came through the defense system. And it hit exactly where he was taking cover. And he, although he was seriously injured at that time, unfortunately in hospital, he was declared, his death was declared, and there was no way that he could have been saved. A young man with a family, with a young child, no need for it. There's just no need for it, and it doesn't achieve anything at all.
Yeah, absolutely terrible. And, you know, one of the points we had, military strategist, Major David Katz from the, he's involved with the South African Defense Force, in studio this morning. And he was saying one of the points he made was you don't just launch, 690 or 700 rockets. It's very, very well orchestrated. It's very, very well planned. And you need to be properly ready, for this. So that means that this was a thought out plan. And attack on Israel over the weekend.
I mean, the plans I think are constantly in place. I don't think that there was something which said, "Look, let's plan now and let's do it over the weekend. Let's hit a particular date." Although that might be the case, but I think that at any moment in time, these plans are ready. Almost like the IDF operates, they have their plans in place and they could theoretically be activated at any moment in time. And I think that that was certainly the situation here. Yes, firing 700 missiles and some of them, 5, 10, 15 at a time in order to try to bamboozle the Iron Dome system as much as they can in order to really try and find its weaknesses. And certainly they did to some degree find the weaknesses, although we have to be very thankful for the nearly 200 Iron Dome interceptions, because one could imagine the amount of damage and the casualties that those rockets could have caused. But there's no doubt that there was a lot of planning involved, that there is a lot of planning involved. And it's not only planning in terms of operating from fixed locations. You need to bear in mind that a lot of these rockets are being fired from mobile locations, that as soon as a rocket is fired, the team is on the run. They're escaping from that area because they know that there is almost certain to be a retaliation to exactly the source of where the rocket is fired. So this is all very well coordinated and orchestrated. And these are plans that exist and that can be activated at any moment in time, including, of course, the leadership taking cover in secure locations. A lot of the homes of the leadership were struck. The Islamic Jihad leadership and also Hamas leadership there, their personal homes were struck. Of course, nobody was there because this was almost anticipated would happen. And there was this one targeted killing that was carried out yesterday of an individual who's been responsible for channeling a lot of money from Iran to Hamas and to other terror organizations. And so that was, I think, just an indication of what Israel is able to do, because this individual was killed while driving in his car in Gaza, Hamed al-Qudari, and he has been somebody who's been on Israel's radar for some time in terms of someone who's not only representing Iran in Gaza, but also channeling the badly needed money through to the renegade groups and to the terror organizations in order to allow them to carry out their terror activities. So his car was hit. He was killed in the process. And I think that that was just kind of a shot across the bow, saying, that if this continues
there's more where this comes from. There's definitely more to come.
Yeah, absolutely.
In fact, just on that note, before we talk about the ceasefire, I do want to remind people that at 6:30 tomorrow evening at the Yeshiva College, there is a Yom HaZikaron, event, and there will obviously, we will be paying a special tribute, a special prayer to those who have lost their lives in Israel over this weekend as well. So that's 6:30 Tuesday evening at the Yeshiva College. We do really want people to come and show solidarity at this particularly difficult time. Anthony Reich, so the Israeli government have agreed to a ceasefire. In some ways, I find this a little perplexing in that we obviously, any time that there can be a prevention of loss of life, it's a good thing. But no one really believes that this is going to hold, surely.
Well, it's even further than that, Howard, because the point is that a lot of people feel that a ceasefire at this time is really unjustified. Not only that it's not going to hold, but why would we agree to a ceasefire now when they've really precipitated this a humongous attack on Israel over the past few days? And that Israel has responded, more than 300 terror act locations were fired upon. The security building in Gaza was destroyed. Individuals were destroyed. The homes were destroyed. I mean, there was a huge retaliation. But in some people's eyes, nowhere near enough in comparison to what we've had to endure over the past few days in this unwarranted sudden escalation in the situation. And so there are a lot of people who feel that a ceasefire at this moment is capitulation, that we should really be a lot tougher, that we should really use the military capability that we really have in order to teach Hamas a lesson that will give us an opportunity for a breather, and that won't will encourage them not to attack in this way, at least in the near future. There are a lot of dilemmas on the plate of the Israeli government right now. The first dilemma is, of course, that later this week, on Thursday, we will celebrate Yom Ha'atzmaut. Yom Ha'atzmaut generally comes with large gatherings of people outdoors. This is the way that Yom Ha'atzmaut is celebrated, that we have these parties, we have fireworks, we have open-air events, we have huge gatherings in all the towns and cities across Israel. And the question is, if we were under rocket fire, with barrages of rockets being fired at us in the way that we've seen over the last few days, how would that affect Yom Ha'atzmaut? What would we do? Because it would clearly be unsafe for those large numbers of people to be gathering outdoors to celebrate Yom Ha'atzmaut. There would be a safety issue involved. So therefore, would the government say, we're cancelling Yom Ha'atzmaut celebrations, we're forcing people to move Yom Ha'atzmaut celebrations to a different date or a different location or a different type of event? How would we deal with all of that? And also, how would we deal with Yom HaZikaron, which, even though it doesn't have the same joyous occasion associated with it, is a memorial day where large numbers of people gather together at military cemeteries, at ceremonies across Israel, cemeteries, in order to mark the more than 24,000 people, and now, of course, four new names, unfortunately, added to the list just in the days before Yom HaZikaron. Those 24,000 plus people who've been killed in wars and by terror attacks across Israel. And so the question is, you know, how do we deal with that? Do we cancel it? Do we recycle it in some way to do it slightly differently? There is a huge dilemma. And of course, these are plans that have been laid for months and even years for these days. So the question is, how would we have to respond under a barrage of fire to those events? And of course, let's not forget that the Eurovision is due to take place within the next week and a half. Rehearsals are already ongoing in Tel Aviv. The main performers have arrived. They're doing their rehearsals. The activities certainly have begun. And I think that there would be nothing that the terror organizations would love more than to see the cancellation of the Eurovision, to see people running away from Israel for fear as a result of this huge attack. And I think that that would potentially be a public relations disaster for Israel. So these are some of the considerations that the government has had to take into account when deciding on whether to proceed with a proposed ceasefire, which the Egyptians have brokered, or not. And I think that timing is really, really important. And of course, let's also not forget that when we sign up not to proceed with the ceasefire for whatever good reason, we're effectively signing the death warrants of certain people who inevitably will be killed as part of the activities, as part of the cycle of violence that will continue beyond the agreement that we don't want a ceasefire. And so this is something that the government also needs to take into consideration and to take responsibility for. And I think that that's a very, very tough responsibility to have.
Yeah, in fact, Ansan says, good morning. The feeling is that they have offered a ceasefire in order to set themselves up with more rockets and to regroup. But Bibi is so great to allow a ceasefire because one life is bigger than having the upper hand. Which is really goes to the point. The only question is, are you saving one life now in order to unfortunately potentially lose more later on?
That is unfortunately the big question, and nobody really has an answer to that, because, you know, what we really know is what we're saving in the short term. It's very, very difficult for us to know exactly what will happen in the long term, although there are a lot of experts around who all know exactly what's going to happen, right?
You know, well, that's going to be my question. I mean, we don't have a lot of time, but do you think the Israeli public is likely to welcome or resent a ceasefire?
I think that there's a split of opinions about the ceasefire. I think overall a lot of people feel resentful that, you know, they feel that we haven't responded and retaliated hard enough against Hamas, and that perhaps another couple of days might have helped or maybe even during the time that we had available to us, we should have done more damage. We should have been more determined in going after those targets that are available to us in Gaza. Having said that, you know, the Israeli army and the IDF prides itself on trying to avoid civilian casualties to whatever extent is possible. And, you know, the Gaza public know that, Hamas know that, the renegade groups, Islamic Jihad and others know that. And, of course, they take advantage of the situation by, you know, putting civilians out in order to prevent the IDF and the Israeli Air Force in particular from carrying out attacks when they know that they could potentially harm civilians. Now, that some people see as a strength, as being a very moral army and being very concerned about the plight of civilians. And some people perceive that as a weakness. Depends on which side of the fence you come from.
We will definitely continue this conversation tomorrow. Let's hope that the day brings peace and some form of a return to normality. Anthony Rock, thank you. As always, it is 8:01. Here is your news with Lindiwe.